kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
You fuckers ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready now.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I just had to get that out of me for a reason.
Yeah, I'm good to go.
I never said yes. I literally never said it. That was all him.
Yeah, I'm good to go now.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me as usual, CJ. CJ, how you doing?
It's so weird because it's not usual. This is a weekend show.
Yeah, we don't join these anymore. Don't make it for these, but I know that that you like one of our reviewers and you wanted to be here for him, and it's a review episode. And
yeah.
Who do we usually lead off with? But Pernell is here as well.
Hello. How goes it, guys?
God, that was loud.
That was loud.
I'm a loud kind of guy. I don't know what you want.
That blew out my fucking speakers and my headphones.
That's what my ex-wife said.
So, Pernell, okay. How's it feel to know you have a fan?
Actually, it feels kind of nice. Because, you know,
I could leave if you really don't like it.
No, I'm just not used to having, you know, fans. I'm used to just kind of being that guy. You know, like, hey, you go out and do these reviews, you go to shut up. Like, well, I guess I can do one. Won't be a problem, will it?
All we want to hear is fucking scores.
Give me a number. 5. Out of what? Like,
7.
I didn't think that.
5 out of 7. Perfect score.
God, that would piss somebody. I was like, you have a range? You have a 7 range? Like, yes. 1 out of 7. 1 through 7. We have to go down to 0.5 on this shit.
And 5 out of 7 is near perfect.
But that's not the right
one. Am I the only one who gets that Reddit joke?
No.
No, I've never seen that one.
Oh, my God.
I don't get it.
I have a weird relationship with Reddit, though. Like, I love Reddit, but I don't want to spend too much time on it because I know I'd become addicted and never leave.
Well,
I never really used Reddit before.
It was kind of showing up everywhere, not just Reddit, where some guy was talking about movies, and he's like, yeah, I would give it a 5 out of 7. It's about a perfect score.
What the fuck?
How the fuck is a 5 out of 7? And, like, everyone had the same...
like, 8 out of 10. Like,
yeah, everyone had the same questions that you guys did. Like, there's a rating score up to 7, and 5 is perfect? What the...
Well, see, the 6 and 7 point are actually possible to obtain.
It makes about as much sense as real review scores.
Just like, do a Google search for, like, 5 out of 7 perfect score, and... just let it wash over you and enjoy it.
A 5 out of 7.
But speaking of 5 out of 7s and perfect scores, we should probably get to the reviews that you're here to take care of, huh, Pernell?
None of them are getting perfect scores, I can tell you that. Spoiler alert!
Well, let's kick things off with Black and White Bushido. This one's developed by Good Catch, published by Endemol Shine UK. It released May 16th on Xbox One and PS4 for $12.99, previously available on Steam. Black and White Bushido is a 2D arena brawler that pits the forces of light and shadow against each other. Each team can disappear into their respective colors and move without being seen. Choose a side and enter a world where skill and reflexes determine who will survive and claim victory. Pernell, what'd you think of this one?
Well, I will say, I know I made my earlier statement, like, no perfect scores here, but the game is actually pretty cool. I did have a chance to play this in multiplayer fashion, which I will also say is kind of a requirement for this game working out for somebody's buck.
You did, to defend the fact that you said there's no, you know, neither of these get perfect scores. We don't give scores.
I know, you know what I mean. I know. Thankfully, thank heavens that you don't give scores, because none of that here. This is all about expressing our interest and, you know, just letting you know this is worth
the money. What's an interest?
An interest involves some sort of apple Sometimes in a tree, not always. And then when you bite it, you could get herpes. But if you decide to, you know, roll the dice and go for double whammy, you can get three oranges. So it's a weird thing there. It has an odd spectrum to it. But back to the game. Something that actually makes sense instead of what I'm rambling about.
Yeah.
So the idea behind this game, it is a deathmatch brawler style title where you are... There's really no story or anything like that. There's no structure. Just here's a game. You should play it. So it starts out with you choosing an avatar and also a spectrum, whether it be light spectrum or dark spectrum. And that is pretty much the team you play on. But in addition to the team that it's focused on, it also focuses on how you focus on playing the game. Because what this game does is it focuses on the aspects of, like the title said, or black and white, but black and white being light and shadow. Or in this case, actually shadow and light. My apologies, people. And what happens is as the level is playing, there are going to be like basically like platforms and ledges and light structures and just various objects throughout the map that will cast shadows. And light will be bouncing off of the different objects, creating these shadow environments. Light characters can blend in with the light, and shadow characters can blend in with the dark. And the goal is typically to murder the other players, because why the heck not, right? So, in addition to trying to kill, the way you kill people is by either using a charging slash attack, which can be done in up, down, left, or right, or you can find various pickup items throughout the map. Like, I've come across caltrops, which I thought were pretty cool, where you lay them down, and if someone walks over them, they start to bleed. So they can't run anymore, and they're bleeding, so they can't hide. So they're sitting duck while they step on caltrop.
Oh, that's
There's
cool.
Bombs and throwing stars. It's a pretty cool concept of a game. It was a lot of fun. We played a number of matches in it, and there are three different modes you can play. There is deathmatch with friends, which is typically what you do. Like, if you're playing with your friends, just trying to kill each other through a time limit. That's what we were doing. There is capture the flag, where a flag will pop up on the map, and you have to try to rush to it and then hold down the button to kind of collect, capture it while you're trying to avoid being killed by your opponents. And challenge mode, which is only available in single player, is basically more like a survival, if anything else. You're just on the map, enemies keep showing up, and you have to keep murdering them in hopes of, you know, lasting as long as possible, and the game will give you a score based on that. So if you have friends to play with, the game has tons of value to it. We had a lot of fun playing the game, literally. But the unfortunate side is if you don't have friends to play with. Ball correction. I said it. No, I won't go that far because the game also has an online mode. So
Ooh. You
can hopefully get online and play with other people. And I thought the game was worth that alone. Like, it's a lot of fun to mess around with and try that with. But if you don't want to play online and you don't have friends, the only single player that I've come across, unless I'm missing a component, is the challenge mode. And that, to me, is not going to hold you over. But as long as you want to get online or play with your friends, this game is awesome.
Well, one of the pitfalls of most arena-style brawlers is that, you know, even with some kind of small challenge mode in there, it's always going to be about the multiplayer.
Yeah. Sad but true. I mean, heck, I love Smash Bros., but there's a reason why I rarely play it. That's because I have no friends that like the game. So it's like, it's an awesome game that I never play.
I do enjoy the visuals of Black and White Bushido. It has a really cool style to it.
Oh, the graphical style is freaking nice. I like the way the characters move on the screen when you do, because basically they have like a very fluid dash motion. And I've been using like the woman in a kimono. She has a parasol over her head when she's walking, but then you start to run and she's like, puts the parasol down and just goes into like a dash stance. And like, it's kind of nice to see you dash into a guy, kill him, and then you stop. It's like, parasol up. It's like, damn, don't even hold back on this thing. But there's no difference in the characters aside from like the animations and stuff, but it's an awesome animation style. So it's all right. You can just have that. But it's a good game. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, though, this game is, if you have the people to play with or you're okay with looking for people online, it's worth the money.
Nice.
Worth every penny.
And all right. If you're someone out there who might not have friends to play this with or friends that own this, let them know that us, the SML podcast, will be giving away a handful of copies of this game for Xbox One and PS4 in the coming week or so.
There we go. So you'll at least have those guys to play online with.
Yeah, we got you covered on both platforms this time. So keep an eye out on our Twitter feed at the SML Podcast, and you know, look for details, because we'll be doing that fairly soon. Probably next week. Probably.
Yes,
I guarantee.
Sooner you get those guys together and get that game played on, the sooner people can release their pent-up frustrations in a black and white blood fest.
Indeed.
And I guarantee that you're going to need to mark what system you want it for in your email, so don't forget that, because that shit's annoying.
Don't be like, hey, I want to enter, and then just like not tell us what you want to enter for. Don't be that guy.
But if you want, if you're okay with getting it on either system, you should probably mention that too, just in case it comes down like a count. I'm like, okay, well, we can give it to this guy and this guy. You know,
it's like, this guy, we have so many for this one, but this guy is also okay with this platform, and we have an extra one over here. So, hey, everybody could win. So exactly. Be considerate. And be inventive. Yes. If you have entered our contest without listening to our show and listening to how we do the giveaways, listen to one.
Yeah, it's fairly obvious. Some of the people that don't listen because they send the same emails every time and wonder why they don't win.
Yeah, you got to be inventive with your entries with us. I think one of our favorites of recent is Aroto Tomato, who just always finds goofy ass ways to enter our contests, and you know that's why they keep winning.
We don't do a
random draw on this show, people. We don't do random winners. That's what Gleam is for with those giveaways. But on the show, you got to make us laugh.
And it's not even like it's favoritism. I mean, it's very obvious that he has the best entries every time.
Yeah.
Are you a bad enough podcast to give me a game that will allow me to escape from these wretched ninjas?
Yes. Yes, we
are. Problem solved.
So yeah, Black and White Bushido sounds pretty good. And again, keep up with our Twitters at the SML Podcast, because we'll do giveaway soon. But let us move on to the other game you were here to talk about this week, and that is called Tango Fiesta, developed by
Tango Fiesta.
Developed by Spilt Milk Studios, published by Merge Games. It released May 17th on Xbox One and PS4 for $9.99. Tango Fiesta is a top-down cooperative shooter for 1 to 4 players. Imagine the events from every single 80s action film ever. Made actually happened to one guy. Well, you and up to 3 friends get to blast, shoot, and knife your way through procedurally generated levels as the ultimate 1, 2, 3, or 4 man army. Pernell, what'd you think of this one?
Well, I like the art style. And I like the names of the characters and things of that nature. For the record, my favorite character is Dr. Hank. He's freaking awesome. he's like a black guy scientist with, I guess he's a scientist. I don't freaking know, but he's dressed like one. He's got like these goggles. He pulls over his eyes, whatever. But basically, the way this game works is it has one of its design decision choices that they made is one of the things that I typically dislike about games. Because they, in their own way, they kind of neuter the game unexpectedly. That is that procedural generation stuff. The way this game works is they give you 3 levels. It's a series of missions you can take on. And it's usually 3 stages and then a boss fight on each set of each level. So what they do is you choose a level and it'll go mission start. And it'll plop you down on the map. It randomly creates a stage and it randomly gives you a number of objectives. Usually being things like capture a point for a period of time, or blow up a house, or blow up a helicopter, or blow up something, really. But once that happens, they drop you down, and enemies will start popping up. You have to kill them, and you have to get to the point, you know, the point and fulfill the objectives, and you finish the stage. However, I'm not sure if you guys have experienced it with your game that involved procedural generations, but typically when a game does that, it limits what you typically can do on a stage or what you'd want to do on a stage. So an example with this game, the only goal you really have is taking out those specific things, whatever they may be. There's no like purpose for searching the map unless you really, really need ammo, which you might be able to kill a guy to get it. But I'm sorry to say, or not sorry to say, you want to search for a guy to kill for that because they spawn all over the freaking place, including right on top of you, which is annoying. I've had maps where the game has dropped me down and I get murdered by like weird flying heads immediately, just like flew into me and killed me. And I'm like, what the hell? I just started the level. And it's because it's just how the procedural generation works. I don't freaking know. But it was annoying. It annoyed the heck out of me. I generally am also another thing that bugged me about the game is that it's a twin stick shooter, which we've played tons of over the last few years, because I think that's become a pretty common style of game, and for good reason. They're fun freaking games. But this game, the second stick is not... I'm not sure what the technical term is for it, so don't hate me for it, but it's not 100% true analog. It is more like you can use your analog stick, but it only hits the specific, like, up, down, left, right, and then like the upper left, upper right.
Yeah, it's just like 8-direction aiming, despite being on an analog stick.
Exactly. And in a game like this, it really hurts the game, because you're trying to shoot dudes, and you're trying to adjust your aim, but you can't quite adjust your aim because you're trying to shoot between the two points, and it's not happening, so you're missing shit. And then I've also had moments while playing the game where usually the guys, when you play, if you aim the stick, the guy's gun points in the direction you're aiming. But I've had times where the gun's not pointing in the direction I'm trying to shoot. So I just have to hope I'm pointing in that direction before I fire the gun. Which I know people might say, well, obviously you're holding that direction, you'll know. But I'm sorry to tell you, maybe it's just me. But I also, even though I'm feeling it, I need to see what I'm doing, too. If the guy's not pointing there, I'm still not thinking he's aiming there, even if I'm holding the stick there.
Yeah.
I've had moments where I'm trying to throw a grenade, which you can also do. You get fine throwables. I try to throw a grenade, and sometimes it'll fall at my feet. Other times it'll go out, and I thought maybe that was related to, like, you know, pressure-sensitive button presses. Oh, what's that?
That's CJ's sound card fucking up or something.
Punch it in the face, CJ. Tell
you. Why do you say sound card? There's no such
I don't know. Because thing anymore. Because something on your end just goes, gang.
Your sound of a bob is acting up. There you go.
You can listen back to the episode and hear what the hell your computer does. I don't know what
it is. It's probably... I don't know. I think it's just microphones go bad after so long on this computer. Like, this computer just evilly affects microphones or something. It eats them up for breakfast and then spits them out.
I don't know.
But you gotta tell it what to do. Tell it to shut up. Get this stuff together.
But yeah, I would slap it,
but I think that'd be really loud.
I noticed that the grenades in the game wouldn't always do what I wanted it to do. Sometimes, like, I would be walking forward and throw a grenade, and it would chuck it kind of where I wanted it to go. And other times, I would hit it, and it would just drop on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, maybe it's context sensitive, or maybe it's based on if I'm running or not. But I never quite nailed down what was actually determining where the grenade went. It would just do it. It was annoying as hell. It feels weird to even say that about this game, because I like the art style. I like the humor.
Funny game. It is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Though I will say one thing that was kind of annoying, but it's a small complaint, really, is that there's arcade mode and then there's story mode. I've tried arcade mode and story mode. If I pick story mode, it lets you choose any of the characters, but it's always turned as if you're playing as John Strong, which makes me kind of sad. It's like, okay, what if I'm playing as Dr. Hink? I want to hear the story from Dr. Hink's perspective. The man's smart. He would have a much more interesting take on the scenario than John Strong would. But now, alas, there's no old John. There's no old Dr. Hink, just old John Strong telling a tale. So I thought that was kind of a weird design choice on their part. If anything, just make the story mode be all you can choose is John for the purpose of the story mode, and then let you use the other characters for arcade mode.
But, yeah, it's possible that the added characters were kind of added in after everything else, and they're like, well, then we would have to completely rework the story and be like, fuck it, whatever. Just let them pick whoever in the story mode, but we're going to keep the story.
Yeah, and that makes sense, too, which is why I think it's more like a minor complaint than anything else, honestly. I'm not going to hate the game for that. Just, I wish they didn't do that.
How was the game?
For other things.
Yeah.
No, go.
How was the game performance-wise for you? Because one of my friends I talked to, fan of the show, who goes by the name Memories of Final, mentioned that he ran into some memory leak issues with the game where after, you know, because you kill enemies and the blood stays splattered on the ground, it seems like the game isn't clearing that stuff out of memory, and it would... After a while, the game would just get super sluggish.
I never experienced that, but it may also be because of how I was trying to play the game, because, like I mentioned earlier, due to how they designed this game, and there's really no purpose in trying to mow down as many guys as possible unless you're just a sadist for score.
Or you're grinding for money.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I said. For scores, you know, that's the money. I felt like it's better just to run through the stage and take out the objectives and move on. No. So I never really had that kind of a blood trail in the system. But whether I did or not and just didn't realize it, I can't say I experienced any memory leaks, but I hope that maybe that just means that it's a rare case, or maybe your friend had an unfortunate situation with him. What about you, though?
Did you experience it at all? I didn't run into that, but I also didn't usually go from stage to stage to stage. In between, you know, I would go back to the main menu and I would go to the shop and see if there's anything I could unlock, or I would switch characters, and I was constantly changing it up, and I didn't like marathon through a bunch of stages. So I don't know if like going back to menus would clear out whatever memory leak issues there were, or if there isn't a memory leak and there was just something else on his end.
Ah, that's possible. Well, hopefully that's all. Hopefully it's like a smaller case, and it's not going to affect everybody, but it's worth mentioning too.
Maybe he's just stupid.
Oh, come on.
The sass.
Such rage. No, man, it's not stupid. It's just having difficulties, you
Although,
know?
You know what? I'll let him say it.
What?
Or
that he's stupid. He still owes me a boosting session in the game.
So you're telling me it's too late now.
He was supposed to help me with the WWE 2K16 online, and I finished it without him.
Oh, that son of a bitch.
Because you valued your time more than helping me boost my score.
Well, he's also an achievement hunter, Pernell. He also needed the achievement. It was a co-op thing.
Oh, in that case, if you were helping him too, then I don't know what was there. Shit.
Yeah, exactly.
He just stiffed. You need to tell him off. You ain't going to take that shit no more. Stiff you back.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's fine. I got it and he don't, so I don't think I lost.
Oh, hey, well, he scored it. Yeah, I mean, he's on his own. He can find some other way to get it.
Suck. No. And in 10 days, the server's closed, so good luck.
So, anyway, Tango Fiesta.
Oh. I want to mention one more thing about this game, too, that I wasn't really wondering if you experienced it. So, you know, as you're killing mobs in this game, every once in a while you come across a guy with an icon over his head. It'll either be like a health kit or an ammo unit, or I guess like a general, like a badge icon, which determines like what rank the guy is.
Yeah.
If you kill, to my gauge was that if you kill a guy with an item marker over his head, you'll get whatever item that is. But I've had more than a few cases where I kill a guy with an item marker over their head and I don't get squat from them.
Yeah, I'm not sure what those mean. Like, I don't know if it's possible that that's an item that they have available to use. Like, if you shoot him enough, he could heal himself. Or if there's a chance the item can drop. I'm not sure how that worked.
I mean, I'm going to lie. Just by design of how I've been with how the game is, I don't think they would have designed this with the guys using items like that.
No.
So I'm thinking it's probably like what you were suggesting, which is that maybe they could have the item and use it, and it's a chance of them dropping it. But yeah, but it still just seems weird because it's not explained at all. So it just seems odd that a guy will have an icon, won't drop it when he dies. And yeah, I've sometimes had guys with an icon over their head, but they drop something completely freaking different.
Yeah.
I need a healing kit. Guys dropping ammo. I was like, what the hell are you doing? I need real goods. The real shit. Not this fake McJobojo.
Yeah.
But they don't ain't listening. They're just dropping garbage. But,
it's weird.
It's a very weird game. There's a lot of odd decisions that were made here.
I think even with the missteps, it's still a fun and funny game. It has a solid lineup of characters. A nice lineup of weapons that you unlock through the game as well. For $10, what do you think on this?
I'd definitely call it a try, it mainly because it has a lot. It has those positive quirks like you mentioned before, but there are also a lot of other games out there that do this, some of which do it better. And you might be like, maybe I want to look for, you know, a sale or something like that, because the price is what makes this workable.
Yeah.
$10 for dual stick shooter is pretty decent, but I mean, you never know. I mean, with the way sales are dropping half the darn time, one of those other games might be out there. But
true,
if you like 80s references and the humor that comes from them and things of that nature, you might get your money's worth just by playing it for those. because it throws all kinds of words. They start throwing like aliens at you and crap like that later on, and weird ghost things. I don't know where the hell they come from, but we're ghosty people.
Yeah, I love the crazy humor in the game. Just the crazy. It has style. If nothing else, the game is covered in style and blood.
Yes, I agree. Blood style. Bloody style. So, and I mean, with those things in mind, I think it's definitely worth at least a try.
Cool beans. Well, Purnell, as always, it is awesome having you on the show doing these, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again soon. Do you have any final words to sum this part up?
Not so much. Just, you know, I still think we were talking about earlier, I think they would have made more money on this if they called it Ay-Ay-Ay Tango Fiesta. Ay-Ay-Ay.
All right, next up is Revenant Saga, developed by EXE Create, published by Kemco. Oh, Kemco, you know what that means. Summoning Chris Taylor.
Ooh.
So, shockingly, this is a Kemco game that's not on a 3DS.
What do you mean?
This one released May 9th on PlayStation 4, PlayStation Vita, and PlayStation 3 for $14.99, and is a cross-buy title. Become a revenant and find the truth beyond revenge in this gothic fantasy RPG with stunning 3D battles, boasting a story that blurs the lines between good and evil, a refined 3D battle system, and plenty of content to go around. This is one title not to be missed. Chris Taylor, what did you think of Revenant Saga?
I don't know. I missed it. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
I know. I probably would have, actually. I don't really pay attention to PlayStation releases as much as the other stuff. But, obviously, I had to be summoned for this one. So, yeah, Revenant Saga. So
you were Captain Kemco.
Apparently. That's an okay title to have. If they ever remake Dragon View, I'll be sure to hop onto that.
Nice.
It's like a pseudo sweet sequel to Draken.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Draken is a game that no one should ever play, I don't think. But this game, however, you know, fast forward 25 years. So Revenant Saga is another X-Create and Kemco game. The last time I was talking about them, it was to talk about Dragon Sinker, which has been one of my favorites. I'm still playing it. Like, I'm still, like, putting off my Dragon Quest VII to play more Dragon Sinker and try and get to the end. But,
that's the sign of a good game. If you're holding off on Dragon Quest.
I think that's becoming a recurring theme for me, though. Putting off the Dragon Quest VII. I think I've been doing that for like a year now. they had gone to that, to the 8-bit style, like, true throwback retro RPG with just a million and one contents. And, I've been really getting into that, and they kind of went to that from the sort of mobile Android, somewhere between Super Nintendo and PlayStation graphics type stories with the dramatic characters and like the long bouts of dialogue and the really cool art and stuff. And so Revenant Saga is basically they're going back to that and then improving on that instead of pushing forward with like Dragon Sinker stuff. Like I was playing the game and noticing things that weren't in there that were in Dragon Sinker, which having been playing these games, or since I've been playing these games since, like, you know, Infinite Dunamis, it's like I've been watching this sort of incremental additions that they've been making. So for them to take a step back on features, I was kind of like, I don't know about this now. But actually, the game is really pretty, and they are doing a lot of things for the first time with it, such as 3D polygon models. So they've got 3D battles. I say 3D in the sense that they would have said 3D on the PlayStation. Like, not the stereoscopic 3D, but the fact that they're using polygons and textures and stuff.
Yeah.
And also the music is way more in your face now. Like, it's got the searing electric guitars, like, you know, the big strings, the real drums, you know. They got the real, like, CD quality soundtrack, as they used to call it back in the Sega CD days. Pulling out that Red Book audio.
Man, so those were the days.
I know.
Such a simpler time.
Yes. And yet somehow, like, everything was so state of the art. But, yeah, so, like, this game is essentially like one of their mobile games, but given a huge facelift, and of course, expanding in ways that one could when one goes to, you know, such a powerful thing as the PlayStation 4 or Vita or PS3 or whatever. The game follows it, as far as the story goes, like, if you've played anything between Alphadia and Unlucky Mage, you've seen, like, the kind of story beats that sort of follow. You start with a male character, of course, who has some outsideriness about him, who is on his mission, and who meets, you know, various characters that join him, and they range from being mighty but totally innocent Valkyrie lady partner, who's actually, like, probably my favorite character in the game so far, to the, you know, sullen badass that gets into fights with all the other characters and just really doesn't belong in your party, but you have to use them anyway due to some kind of duress. And they even introduce one of my favorites, the little girl with the long pigtails, who turns out to be some kind of badass as well, with a secret, with ulterior motives.
Nice.
Yeah, so now I will say, though, that this story is a little more fleshed out than others, and it actually does bring in some complexities. You know, you've got a lot of characters dealing with morality in an interesting way. I mean, ways that you would probably see in, like, a PlayStation game, but it's definitely a couple of shades more complex than your average, you know, sort of RPG of this ilk. That is to say, like, anything that Kemco's come out with so far, this one is a little bit of a step forward. So if you're one who likes to play RPGs for the story and just kind of figure out what's going to happen to the characters and stuff, this is one of the more compelling titles, I think. Without giving anything away, I can say that much anyway.
All right. So it sounds like a nice, instead of a 16-bit era RPG, it's more like a 32-bit era RPG, and a solid story behind it with somewhat stereotypical characters.
Yeah. You know, they make the puppets dance in an interesting way.
Hey, as long as it's got a good story and good gameplay, it sounds good to me.
Yeah. Now, there are a couple of things that I think maybe, because you say 32-bit, but at the same time, like, there's some aspects of its sort of mobile game roots that it clings on to tenaciously, and one of those is a kind of, like, a slightly jerky animation whenever you're walking. And in fact, with the PlayStation 4 controller, they've introduced now 8 directional moving, so you can now move diagonally, which is what my characters would be. Yeah, I know. Earthworm Jim all over again.
What the hell?
But yeah, since you have now 8 points of articulation, it tended to be with my stupid thumbs that the character would move diagonally more often than not when I was using the PlayStation stick. So I was kind of like, all right, D-pad for me. But I'm not a big fan of the PS4 D-pad. It's a little too recessed. So I did find myself being like, you know, sort of cursing my left thumb, but there's not really anything in the game that it's not a hindrance to the gameplay, because the gameplay is such a traditional menu-based RPG type thing, so it's like, it, and plus you get used to it. But I did notice that it was I had been spoiled by Dragon Sinker, which has meticulous, like, precise controls, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, having said that, that's, to me, I like these kind of games better than the ones where you're in 3D running around with your guy that's, you know, like your, like the Tails games and everything like that. You just got your costume cosplayers running around hallway after hallway.
So I have a question about the game. I'm not sure if you would know about this or not, because I know that you don't have access to a Vita or anything, but does the game have any kind of cloud save, cross save functionality? Because I know, I'm trying to remember what the last PlayStation Kemco RPG we talked about was, but it was cross-buy, so you would get it on the three platforms, but it was not cross-save, so you would have had to play them separately on each of the three platforms if you were to do that.
Yeah, I never messed around with a Vita before, so I couldn't actually tell you on that one. But,
did,
I mean,
did
I
you recall? Did you recall seeing any kind of options of uploading like a cross save feature or anything like that?
It didn't have anything like that. It just had three slots, and you would just, you know, save to a slot, really, basically like all their other games.
All right. Well, sounds like a little bit of a bummer. I know that was one of my only gripes with the last PlayStation RPG that Kemco put out. Just because it seems like having one purchase count for three platforms is awesome, but it sucks that you can't carry your progress over. Like, start at home on a PS4, upload your save, download it to your Vita, and continue playing.
Yeah, that's something that, honestly, I guess as a Nintendo guy, I'm just used to not having that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Quest of Dungeons. Like, true. I have that on three systems, and all of them are unique. Unique to themselves. Like, in fact, even when I beat the game, I've now beaten it twice on the 3DS, both the mansion and the other thing. So, and yet when I'm on the Wii U or PS4, I'm starting all over because I don't play it as much on there.
I don't think it's as big of a deal with something like Quest of Dungeons, just because that one is a roguelike where you're kind of expected to start over every time you play.
That's true. But yeah, and I guess I didn't see any evidence of a cloud save on there. That's something I feel like they could have overlooked and maybe should work on. Because I really do hope that they come out with future entries on the PS4. I feel like unless you're downloading like an old PS2 or well, you can't download a PS1 RPG on PS4, but you can on PS3.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, since they're competing with those downloads on their with their games, you know, since it's basically set at the same price point, then I feel like they could, you know, step up the modernity a little bit.
Yeah, I would love to see them add cross-save compatibility just for someone who has a PlayStation 3 or 4 and a Vita. You know, you're getting the game on multiple platforms. It would make sense to be able to have the same game save across multiple platforms, but I don't know the technical requirements to program something like that, and I'm not going to armchair code here, so I don't know how difficult that is to implement, but it would be nice to see them add it. Overall, for $15, what do you think of this one, though?
$15, I say go for it. Nice. I know their games are usually a little cheaper, but they definitely put more into this one as far as, and it's going in a direction that I like, and that's what I think will be helpful. So I'm really hoping enough people buy this that they'll, by the next chapter, maybe they'll integrate a little bit more stuff into it, maybe make the world maps a little more 3D like the battles are, you know? It's got that Final Fantasy VII thing of, like, the characters looking completely different on the world map than when you're in battle with them. So I'd like to see a little more smoothness like that, but again, you know, it's at the core, it's a very good game and well worth $15.
Nice. Oh, As Divine Hearts was the last one that was on PS4.
That's yeah.
And that was another one where it was $15, and I think the increased price is because you're getting potentially three copies of the game.
True. And yeah, like I said, they're putting more production into it. I mean, like I said, this is the first one I've seen that has polygons. So that's, and I know polygons are harder to put together than sprite art.
Yeah. Anyway, I know you took care of one other game for us, so let's dive into that one, and that is called MOP Operation Cleanup, developed and published by Insanisoft, released April 20th on the Wii U for $5. Nice even number, no 99s in this one. You are MOP, a curious and unique model of robot. You've been engineered using simple parts with one single objective: to clean up a polluted environment. Explore 5 challenging worlds with 50 difficult missions full of pixel perfect platforming fun. What'd you think of this one?
All right, so MOP. I was excited about this one because it's a little robot who has to clean up like the entire world, and that harkened back to one of my favorite games, Chibi Robo, on the GameCube. And so I was expecting to be a funny little, you know, 1950s style robot with a toothbrush, like just cleaning up entire junkyards and stuff. But in fact, this is a little bit of a different thing. It's a dystopian, like, nightmare, I suppose. Maybe it's a cautionary tale over the recent attacks against the EPA that have been going on. But yeah, you do play a tiny robot, indeed, and your job is to gather up all the trash. But the presentation of it, interestingly, I had no idea it was going to be like this until I actually bought the game. But it's not in the strictest sense like a platformer. It's a runner game. That is to say, your character is always moving. So it's actually a little bit more like, you know, the Mario game where you run and get the coins or something. I don't know. My cell phone's crap. I can't play any of those. but so you start the stage and your mop buddy is running to the right, and you have but one button to do everything with, and that is the jump button. So he can't change direction. He can't, like, you can't slow him down or speed him up unless there's something in the stage that lets you do that. So let's say if you come upon a ramp, you can push the jump button at the right time and he'll do a slide, and that'll do a prolonged jump or something like that. You can also do wall jumps a la, like, you know, Mario 64, Mega Man X or something like that. And that's essential to beating the game. So the garbage actually floats in the air like a Mario coin or a Sonic ring or something like that, and your job is to pick up all of them. So to do that, you really have to creatively play within the game's very small framework. That is to say, you're always running and you have to jump, but then stuff is, like, all over the place. So sometimes you'll find, like, a power-up, like a magnet, where as soon as you pick up the magnet, if you're in the right place, all the trash will, like, actually come to you. And as you run through, there are enemies on the ground. You've got your teddy bears sitting in, like, pink goo that are, I think they call them grumpy bears or something like that. Okay. And yeah, it's got bizarre little enemies, and they are actually pretty funny. Some of them are. And yeah, you got to bop them on the head in the game. And the thing about it is that the game keeps track of how much trash you've picked up and how many enemies you fought. And every stage has, like, every round has different requirements for how much stuff you're supposed to get. And one of them is almost always pick up all the trash. And then it's maybe, like, defeat 6 enemies, or sometimes it's defeat all enemies, or sometimes it's, you know, it seems to be, it's all set for the stage, but it's not always, like, you know, you won't wind up having to repeat a stage like 300 times because you missed like one thing out of the whole stage. It's just, as long as you meet the requirements, you can totally complete the stage. But the interesting thing I noted in the later stages is that you can basically get by just doing one or two things, and even if the stage is, like, it's still contaminated, you can be like, well, F you, I'm moving on to the next stage. So you don't, the bar is really low for moving on. So if a level frustrates you, it's more than likely you can get through enough of it to move on to the next one and maybe come back and try and get the better stuff. So I appreciate that, as, you know, as these games can get really fussy.
Yeah.
I enjoy that that they allow you to sort of be like, cheese this, I'm going to the next junkyard.
Cheese this.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't know. I just think cheese it the feds.
Cheese it, it's the fuzz.
Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like a lot of fun. What do you think for $5?
Oh, for sure. It's definitely a good $5 game. The animation is good. It's a little stiff, but your little robot guy has a really cool digitized, like, it's a really funny digitized voice that he's just kind of, like, I don't think he actually speaks English or anything. So he's just sitting there kind of mumbling to himself as you, like, go through the stage. the enemies have a lot of, like, they have a pretty good variety of, like, of interactions and, like, and things like that. And the game has a good sense of humor about itself. So it's got a good amount of life to it, which is hardly ever seen in a $5 game like this. So, it's obvious that a lot of care went into it. And the thing is about the actual platforming and, like, you know, these games, like I said, they tend to be fussy. So you have to do things perfectly. And this game is very good about, putting things in placing things just so that you actually do have to be really creative and utilize some puzzle solving and that pixel perfect jumping in order to get through things. Like, you have to figure out all the physics of the game in order to get the best scores. So that easily kept me busy for hours, and I think that's always worth $5.
Sounds good. And if people don't have a Wii U, the game is also available on Steam and on PS4 for $4.99 each. And if you're a...
Oh, they added a penny for the Wii U release.
They did. It was that extra development cost. And if you're a cheap bastard, we are going to have a handful of giveaway copies on the Wii U coming up in probably a week or so.
Sweet. And yeah, I was just going to say, at least this one, you actually do get the sound out of the Wii U controller, unlike those two games I reviewed a while ago.
Yeah, it's still weird that it didn't do that.
Yeah, it was, what, the Octocopter or something like that?
Yeah, and game. I think Radiant Flux, something like that.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, they didn't have sound coming out of the pad, but I made sure to test it this time, and they sure have it. So.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, well, Chris Taylor, it is always awesome having you on. Sounds like two fun games and two games I'm probably going to have to pick up myself.
Hooray!
So do you have any final words to wrap things up?
Check out my Twitch. Playing through Secret of Mana right now, so that's pretty fun. About 5 more games into the Super Nintendo Top 20, and then I got to figure out something else to do. Apart from that, I don't know, when is this show going to come out?
Probably Monday or Tuesday.
Monday, okay. So on June 3rd, I want to say it's June 3rd. Yeah, cool thing, June 3rd, a couple of weeks from now, I'm going to be on stage in Houston, Texas, with none other than Akira Yamaoka, the composer for the Silent Hill games.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
My band Gimmick got invited to play that event. It's called Replay, Re:Play. And it's a good, they're an up-and-coming, like, kind of entertainment company that are trying to put together some really good shows using composers and stuff. And we just got to know them, and they wanted to get Yamaoka out there, but they couldn't afford to fly his whole band out there. So they asked us if we wouldn't mind terribly learning all his songs.
Dude, that is insane.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun show, so... hopefully by the next time I'm on here, I'll have some stories for that.
Really fucking cool.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So if you happen to be in the Houston, Texas area or want to come out, tickets are available. I'll send you a link or something and you can put that up, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have that in the description, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go see Replay and see Chris play with someone way out of his league.
Hooray!
All right, next up, we are going to tackle two different mobile games from our friends at Head Up Games. And when it comes to mobile games, I usually like to call my friend Jacob Garner in. So, Jacob, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
So, you covered two different mobile games. We are going to kick things off with Super Blackjack 2 Turbo Edition, developed by Stage Clear Studios, published by Head Up Games. This one released on iOS and Android May 11th for $2.99. It is also available on Steam for $11.99. Follow the invitation by the owner of the largest casino in Las Vegas and godfather of the local most influential crime family, and face the other participants in a face-off game of cards. Only the best will fly to Vegas to challenge the Godfather himself in a final match. Jacob, what the hell is Super Blackjack 2 Turbo Edition?
All right, so it's like pretty much like a regular blackjack game, but they're trying to put a retro Street Fighter 2, like King of Fighters, Art of Fighting kind of feel to it. And the full name of it's actually Super Blackjack Battle 2 Turbo, the Card Warriors. And, yeah. So there's 10 players you can initially choose from, hailing from all over the world. Each one's got their own backstory and location. You're traveling all over the world to battle it out. In each match, you start out with $1,000, and you have 10 rounds to defeat your opponent. But at the same time, there doesn't seem to be any real rhyme or reason to the AI. Like, they're going to bet wildly and either lose by, like, the 7th or 8th round, or they'll win by, like, some astronomical amount that you'll never, ever catch up to. So if anything, in this game, the real strategy is to not lose as badly as your opponent. I found myself betting, yeah. It's like, yeah, like, theoretically you can win, but, like, and in all reality, you just need to lose less. So I found myself betting somewhere around, like, 50 to 150 a round, and that kept me as a winner most of the time, even if the dealer was winning more often. And there's no way to change the difficulty of the game. It's just based on luck. So it's kind of like a have at it thing.
That's how a lot of blackjack is, where just it all comes down to, I don't want to say luck, because blackjack people out there are going to be like, no, there's a lot of skill to this. For idiots like me, it's all luck. So
right, and that's fair, but it's just like, there was no way to, like, I don't, again, with such an unpredictable AI, like, there's obviously, like, no, there was no way to ramp up, you know, the difficulty of it, like you would, like, Street Fighter 2 or something like that. Or in other games where it's just, like, they just, the only other game that's really coming to mind is, like, Shuffle Puck from when I was a kid. Like, some of the opponents would be way more difficult than other ones. Anyways, there's no save option during a single-player game, so you're stuck playing that game through the end. Otherwise, you'll have to start all over the next time that you want to play. And while that may not be an issue for those who are playing on Steam, where you're expected to just sit there for a while, for a mobile game, that, like, that hampers, like, how, like, how I view the game a lot, because the point of it is that it's mobile. I should be able to pick up and play this game whenever. And so the fact that there's no save factor, that's kind of like for me. There's also a multiplayer aspect for the game, which I'm going to guess is where the real fun of this game is. But I can't tell you, because I was never able to find somebody to play online against, despite the game supposedly having cross-platform play with Steam. I mean, I guess maybe they meant Android phones, maybe. I don't know. But I never found somebody to play against. Like, and I've had this game with me for, like, 2, maybe 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's about 150 people. I mean, I don't know if the leaderboards only go up to about 150 people, but there's only 150 people on there worldwide. Most of them only have one win or a loss.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so it's just like, it really seems like nobody's able to find it. Everybody's just like, forget it. So I think it's kind of telling that, you know, the highest amount of wins anyone has on the leaderboards is 2. But the art and music of the game is a lot of fun. It's got a lot of nods all over the place to Street Fighter 2. And pretty much to wrap it up, like, I feel weird saying this, but I can't completely recommend the game. Like, if you're looking for a decent blackjack experience on the iPhone, then yeah, you can go for this game. It's $2.99 on the iOS store, but with the willy-nilly AI, the lack of saving during the single-player campaign, and the lack of anyone playing online, I can't recommend it for the average iOS user who's looking for a game that they can pick up and put down in a 5-10 minute session. Like, if you're looking to play online multiplayer, like, it's DOA. And I'm not talking like the fighting game series. Like, I'm talking like this thing is dead on arrival.
You wrote the words willy-nilly down on a piece of paper to read, didn't you?
I did.
You are the worst.
I think I actually wrote it twice in my review.
I will say, if nothing else, I got to give them credit for trying something different with blackjack. Instead of just blackjack, it leads to... It can lead, at least, to some more dramatic games in the later rounds, but I also noticed that if you bet big at the beginning and win a hand or two right away, you could just bid minimums and not give a shit the rest of the time, because the other guy will never catch you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but I had more success with the smaller bets than, you know, the bigger ones.
No.
But
I mean, which isn't a surprise, because you like the bigger ones.
But yeah, like, I really did appreciate the art style of it, and that's really the biggest selling point of this game. Which is also, you know, the other issue, because I mean, like, yeah, I have a problem with this game as like a mobile game, but as a Steam game, I'm also looking at it, and this thing costs $11.99 on Steam. And if you're like, if the main draw of this is supposed to be the multiplayer aspect, nobody's playing it, at least not yet anyway. No. I mean, I'm hoping like with more reviews, like, you know, interest will pick up, but like the Steam game's been out for a bit. So
yeah, there's always a chance for a community to build around it, at least.
Yeah. I mean, if the saving's fixed and there was a decent community, I'd give this game a full recommendation. Like, I'd even be willing to look past like the fact that you can't save in single player.
Yeah.
As if there was just that decent community, but it's just, yeah.
For those who might be interested in getting it on Steam, up until May 26th. So by the time this episode comes out, you'll have, 3 or 4 days. It is on sale for $4.07.
Oh, wow.
So if you're interested in this, I have no goddamn clue.
That's weird. Like, legit, I'd pick it up for $4.07. Yeah, that's definitely worth it then.
Because it is 66% off, and that is...
Oh, okay, that's why.
Yeah, the most recent update on the Steam page as well is from May 11th, so it looks like they are still invested in making it work. And hopefully an audience builds, because it has promise.
Yeah, and it's really, like, it's honestly a lot of fun. It's just, no one's playing it. So, come on, everyone buy this game and start playing it, so then the leaderboard's going to have more than 2 wins on there.
Anyway, the other game from Head Up Games to talk about is called Anybody Out There? Dead City, developed by Everbyte, published by Head Up Games, released May 18th on iOS and Android for a whopping 99 cents. A message from an unknown number, will you answer? Anybody Out There? Dead City is a game in which you emerge completely in an incredibly captivating real-time adventure. Your choice of response will determine the fate of a complete stranger and decide over life and death. The only thing at your disposal, your phone and the Messenger app, and your wits and empathy. So what'd you think of this one?
It was okay. And that's my review.
You need a bit more than that.
No, I got way more than, you know, I've got way more than that. So the game's similar to a previous title that I've reviewed for the podcast, Vampire the Masquerade, We Eat Blood and All of Our Friends Are Dead. If you remember that from probably like 40 podcasts ago. And it's similar to that in that all the information is presented to you in the forms of text from a messenger app. You get a message from somebody identifying themselves as Sam. It's never really made clear whether it's a boy or a girl. They kept that throughout the game, I guess, to give it some sort of mystery or like to give you your idea of Sam so you can use your own imagination. And Sam is the survivor of some sort of zombie apocalypse in a city that is not yours. Neither of you know each other. Sam was just lucky to have picked up somebody's cell phone and they had your number listed as one of their favorites. Sam's frequently going to text you with the latest situation. You'll comment with a suggestion as to what they should do next or give support and or put downs. And the situations get more intense as the story continues. Now, unlike Worlds of Darkness that I had reviewed earlier, anybody out there expects and encourages you to play passively. When Sam disappears for a few minutes to check something out, you can exit out of the game for 5 to 10 minutes or wait till you've received a notification from the game itself. If you don't answer right away, that's okay. It has no bearing on the game, much like the Lifeline game that I had reviewed even like farther back. I think probably around this time last year I had reviewed it. So, you know, go dig up May 2016, you know, podcast and search for it. So on the plus side, the game allows you to play it in short 2 to 3 minute clips throughout the day. It's perfect for commutes and bathroom breaks. But the real negative to this game is that, unfortunately, I never found the story to be particularly interesting. And while, like, I do appreciate the short periods that are necessary to play the game, they aren't effective at building up any real story or tension with it. I really never even felt like any real connection to Sam.
So you're a heartless bastard, basically.
I don't know if I'd say that I'm a heartless bastard, but the thing is that it's just like, I felt like when I played when I played the Vampires game and when I played Lifeline, like I genuinely cared about these characters. Like, they gave me enough information about themselves. They built up the story. They described everything around them. Like, Lifeline was very descriptive, like, when it was describing the environments and everything around it. Vampires, like, the character would send, oh, like, here's my art that I'm working on right now. This is what I experienced, and I'm portraying it in my art. Like, it had that going for it. This one is just like, oh, there's a house across the street with an old man in it. What should I do? Like, okay. Like, I don't
say hi.
Yeah. Well, it's in this one, it's either, you can throw an alarm clock to distract, the zombies down the street, who will then probably attack the old man, or you can do nothing. And so I chose to do nothing because I decided I was going to let the old man live. So it's just like it. Yeah, I get that you're supposed to use your imagination, but it was very bare bones. Like, if you're looking for like an engrossing text adventure, this one could use some work. But my other complaint was that the Lifeline and Worlds of Darkness games at least had ambient soundtracks to go along with it. In this one, the only sound that's in the game is the notifications when a new message has been sent. And yeah, I guess that's kind of lifelike, but a little touch like some music can go a long way for a game like this, like to make you feel like you're experiencing like what's in the game. Like Lifeline, that one was in a sci-fi thing, so the soundtrack was Alien. And Vampires, that one had like a very like artistic, I don't want to say indie feel to it, but it fit. You know, here there's nothing.
See, I honestly think that not having music fits this game more than if there was a soundtrack playing, because the game is meant to be you texting with someone. It's not like when you open up the Facebook Messenger app that you have a soundtrack playing the whole time.
Well, maybe some of us do.
Well, just because you're constantly playing Thomas the Tank theme for your kid doesn't mean that everyone else is.
Hey, all right, have you listened to the Biggie Smalls Thomas the Tank remix?
Everybody has listened to that.
That is amazing. Okay. All right, but like, and the thing is that I'm aware that yeah, it's realistic, and yeah, like Tex Adventures when I was a kid did not have soundtracks to them, but the thing is that it could really help with the world building because this game limits itself so much to like, honestly, it's like 1 to 3 minute like little intervals of you texting back and forth with Sam. That it's just like there's really nothing to it. Like I don't know. It just it needs help, and the 1 to 3 minute clips of it is as much of a bane to it as it's a blessing. It's really odd. But the thing is that for 99 cents, it's a decent game. It's a tad forgettable, but it's decent. And for that price, it's definitely worth a spin. I mean, 99 cents. If you're a fan of Tex Adventures, you can't lose on this.
Nice. I've had my eye on it. I like how unique it is in what it's doing, where it's trying to be... It's not trying to just be another, like, choose-your-own-adventure thing. It's trying to make it feel like you're talking to someone via text message. And I guess it might not be the most... emotionally involving game, but I like that they're at least trying something different.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah.
Helpful. Very helpful sentence right there. Well, I want that transcribed.
I'm, you know what? Shut up.
Yeah. That is, I want that to be the quote from the SML podcast on
that they'll put up on the website. I don't know. It's just like, I'm thinking of like back when I was playing Lifeline, and the thing is that, you know, it had a similar thing going for it, but they were able to do like, you know, much better world building. Again, they had the ambient music going along with it, and it's just, yeah, I guess it's not completely realistic, but when you're not going to take a lot of time to describe the world around you, and then it's just like, oh, well, I'm in a house, or I'm in a building, and I'm just running to the building next to the building. Like, they don't even say, like, they don't describe what the buildings even look like, or, like, what kind of room you're in. Like, it's just very basic. It's a very basic text adventure.
But you would have to think, if you're talking to someone, like, if you were texting me, and I was like, hey, where are you? You'd be like, I don't know, I'm in some fucking place next to a house. Well, okay, well, where is it? I don't know, it's a fucking house next to a house. Like, it seems
well,
like...
Well, right, but then we, you could be we, like, all right, well, can you describe, like, you know, what does it look like outside? Like, can you see the road? Like, can you tell me, like, what intersection you're on?
I just know that if I were texting someone and they wanted these long-winded explanations... That's asking too much for me. It's goddamn text messaging. If anything, I would take a picture and show you the house and be like, dude, look, I told you it's a fucking house that looks like a house.
And the thing is that that's actually fair. And I think that actually was one of my complaints about of the vampire game, because it was like none of like it was just like how he's telling the story isn't actually realistic. But then here I am actually complaining that when it is realistic, I'm not getting enough of a story. which now, like, I'm
which
I'm
just goes to show that you're a picky bitch who can't be pleased.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
So overall, it sounds like...
Yeah, definitely check it out.
Nice. Looks like Head Up Games has two games that very unique in what they're doing, but just needs a little bit more polish. And possibly a sequel could be more fleshed out. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if like the whole... I don't know if anybody out there is supposed to become like its own thing, kind of like how Lifeline did. Because Lifeline's now its entire... It's like its own series. When like the latest one that I've got is one where you're in a snowstorm, or like you're connecting or you're talking to somebody who's in a snowstorm. So like, I don't know if maybe anybody out there could, you know, keep doing kind of like this genre thing, like, oh, we'll do like a sci-fi, like Alien Abduction one next or something like that.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd be interested in checking it out. But Jacob, thanks so much for doing these reviews. I know you'll be back on soon, either via voice or via text, whatever you decide that week. Do you have any final words to sum up your reviews?
Joe sucks.
You bitch. All right, last game to talk about tonight is called Gore Script, developed by Sergio Bucher.
Sure, why not?
I don't know that name. Published by Amused Sloth, which is an amazing name. Released June 15th. It releases June 15th.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not past tense.
Wow, that's a bit ahead still. For $9.99 with a soundtrack available for $2.99 as well. Gore Script is a classic first-person shooter game inspired by the great old classic first-person shooters that define the genre. Fight your way through 18 handcrafted levels of frantic action paced gameplay from easy to hardcore levels of difficulty. CJ, what did you think of Gore Script?
Gore Script is basically that. It plays very much like Doom, actually, which isn't surprising considering it says inspired by classic FPS games, but it's very, very similar. All of the movement in the game feels like you're sprinting in Doom, holding the left trigger like you would in the arcade version, and even everything down to having to pick up keys in order to unlock certain colored doors.
Ooh, that is
to get to the end of the level. Yeah, this is very, very similar to Doom. The movement is very fluid, and it's very easy to dodge your enemies if you're playing on an easier difficulty. I assume harder difficulties, they probably shoot a lot more, and there's a lot more of them. But I'm a noob.
You bitch.
Or I would say scrub. Noob isn't really the right term, because noob would imply that I'm new to games, when really I'm not.
Well, maybe you are a noob.
No, these kind of games are definitely up my alley. I'm really enjoying the shooting in the game. It feels very solid. Everything just goes where you aim it. The sensitivity is a little bit odd to get used to, because it's very, very low. Even turning it up the whole way is very, very low. But I saw a complaint on the Steam forums about that, and they said that they were going to fix that and increase the level that you could change it to, so that hopefully it's not so damn slow.
It's always good. I mean, the game is still a little over, 2 weeks, 3 weeks away. And in an email, he did say to me, let me pull up this email, because I asked if at the time if there were any embargoes since it was so far away. And he did say no. It's like, yay, we're indie. He said, please have in mind that while the game is not 100% ready, the version that you'll get access to is feature complete. So there is some minor fine tuning that I'm sure is going to come along as it goes, but you do have a feature complete game.
Yeah. There's also something that keeps you playing with the permadeath mode, which basically makes this game a roguelike rather than just progressing through levels and trying to beat the game. Now you're trying to progress as far as you can before dying and then restarting, and just keep going until you can eventually get through the entire 18 levels. The level design in the game is amazing. Like, very well set out. It's not randomly generated. It's all just the same layout every time, which makes sense. I mean, with these kind of games, I imagine it would be hard to make it randomly generated and make every single thing you need spawn.
Yeah.
Because you have to have those keys in order to get through the doors.
Yeah, that would suck if, like, the key spawned behind the door.
Yeah, I don't think the random generation would work in this kind of game, and so they didn't do that. But there's plenty of, like, interesting shortcuts and different ways you can go about the level to still get to the same point, which I like. There's a good weapon variety in the game. There's, like, 5 ranged weapons. So far, I've only picked up 3, and they're hidden pretty well, and there's multiple points in which you can pick them up.
Like, I noticed in the first level there was a point that you could pick up the rocket launcher that was really difficult, and I kept just dying trying to get it because there was, like, blocks that would fall down and keep going up and down and smashing the ground, and you had to try to time that, but the timing was really quick, so I was just like, after two deaths and restarting the level, I was just not interested in dying again. So I gave up on it then, and then in like the second or third level, there was a secret I found that led to a much easier to get rocket launcher that was like, okay, now I have it, and I didn't have to go through the trouble of getting it that way. And if you already have it and you go to pick that up, it still helps you. Even if you already have the item, you now just get a bunch of armor, health, and ammo.
Oh, nice.
So it's still worth it to go pick up stuff that you already have. There's also a rail gun, which is really, really good. It can kill multiple enemies within a single shot, and as long as they're right in front of each other, of course. Because it's a very like small, almost sniper-esque style, where it's like a tiny little bullet, but if it can go through a ton of enemies if they're lined up.
Well, yeah, and that's the point of a rail gun.
yeah. Well, maybe people don't know what a rail gun is. You know, so shut up. Anyway. No, but that thing pretty much one-hit kills most of the smaller enemies. The annoying, weird three, well, I would just call it the Hydra, I guess, because it's a three-headed thing that shoots at you. That thing takes a lot of shots, and it still takes like three or four rail gun shots to kill. There's also just the base weapons that you start with, the shotgun and the melee weapon, which is just a hammer and a shield, which was interesting. You can actually block with the shield, and I'm not sure. I think that when the bullet bounces off your shield, it can actually hit the enemy that if they shoot at you, and so that's pretty cool that you can reflect it, I believe. I noticed that it would like shoot off of my shield, but I'm not sure if it was actually damaging the enemies or not. I couldn't tell, but I think it was, because otherwise that animation wouldn't take place. And then you have the shotgun, which is great, does a decent amount of damage, but runs out of ammo very quickly. Luckily there's constant pickups, so you don't have to worry about like running out of ammo and being stuck forever. You're always going to find ammo, and you can run around the enemies pretty easily. So if you run out of ammo, you can just start running through the doors and trying to find ammo
and while they're shooting at you. From what I've seen, it looks like a very fluid game as well.
Yeah, it's very fast-paced, very fluid. You can rush through everything. I think, in fact, there is a scoreboard, and I'm not sure, but I believe that time is actually affecting the scoreboard as well. Because there was levels that I would go through quicker and I would get more score, even though I barely killed anybody, than a level where I killed like a ton of them, but I was slow. So I'm not sure if there's actually a time like multiplier, but it seems likely.
Well, there is a difficulty multiplier. That's something for you to figure out then.
There is a difficulty multiplier, sadly, because I noticed that I was like third place on the leaderboards for most of the levels, and the guys that were number one and two were like, how did you ever get that much score? Like they had hundreds of thousands, whereas I was getting like 10,000. And so I was like, okay, yeah, they obviously played on a harder difficulty, because on easy, your score is multiplied by 0.75. So you actually lose a bit of score.
Well, step it up. Stop. Well, I will on, once on I beat it. Difficulty.
Once I beat it on easy, I will go through on normal, and then maybe hard if I get through it normal, which I'm sure I will. It's just if I have the time to get through normal.
True.
Overall, I'm really enjoying it. I think that it's a really awesome classic shooter. The graphic style is nice and reminds you of classic games. Just the whole way it plays is very classic. The music is even pretty classic and awesome. It takes you back to the weird like electronic music of the old school shooters, where it's like, this is interesting and I like it, but it's like, this is not like, this would not pass as actual music.
Yeah. I'm definitely interested in checking out the soundtrack when it's available. I've heard that it's pretty solid. I'm not going to ask you for a final verdict on this, just because it's still 3 weeks away, but it sounds like you're still really enjoying it. So.
Yeah. I mean, it'll all come down to price when I know how much it costs.
$9.99.
All right. Well, then I know what I'm thinking.
So we will give an official verdict in probably two and a half weeks on the show, closer to release. But I'm guessing that you're going to have a little preview. What are you thinking so far?
For now, it's just a Wyatt.
What?
Well, if you think about it, it'll take a little bit. Just think the letter Y and then it, because it's a preview of what the rating will actually be.
You're the worst. So, yeah, looks like Gore Script is going to be one to keep an eye out on June 15th when it releases. Again, we will address that one again closer to release just to keep it fresh in your minds. But that's it for tonight.
That was a quick episode.
Well, I mean, you weren't here for Jacob and Chris, so you missed those. Because editing...
Well, that's fine. I got to be a part of the best review, which was my own.
But yeah, I guess that's it for tonight. We'll see you guys on this Friday's episode. We'll be talking Portal Knights then, which I'm excited to finally talk about.
Yeah, this should be pretty interesting.
We were hoping to talk about that one on this episode, but I want to put more time into it because I'm having a lot of fun with it. So
yeah, so far I'm enjoying it. I definitely need to put more time in as well.
But yeah, well, hopefully we'll get that on the show next, and that's it for tonight. CJ, you have any final words to end this?
Why not?